Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one podcast episodes of game development and the lifestyle thereof. How are you guys doing? I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me a special guest, a returning guest, Lindell Kempis. How are you doing, Lindell?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Thanks for asking. How about yourself?
I'm doing the same thing I've been doing since last time. But what, it ain't about me. Just for a quick intro, this is part of the podcast where I ask you, our guests, a little bit about yourself, your past, present, and future, and where you're heading.
Sounds good. Okay. Currently, I am a producer, 3D artist for an architectural firm in San Francisco. But I recently started to pick up contract work for game dev. And prior to that, I was working on furniture, you know, but in 3D. But for the future, I'd like to continue to kind of work my way into the game dev pipeline and make my own pipeline, basically, to make assets and, you know, start finishing games and actually shipping it.
Yeah, of course. So we kind of had like a unique relationship, I guess.
And yeah.
Paternal, not paternal. What do you say? Platonic.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, because I was your teacher at Art Institute for a while, and then you know, had a great career since then. And what I always see too is what you're constantly working on personal projects, which I think is one of the best ways to move up, have some growth, and just generally have great opportunities kind of pop up, right? So which kind of leads us to what today is. So this is not like a regular Game Dev Unchained episode. Is an art boost, which is when I invite professionals such as yourself onto the show, and it's a little bit more visual than usual. We still talk, obviously a lot of people still just listen, but there's a visual component to it where we kind of walk through your personal projects and talk about the technical breakdown of how you went about it and what you accomplished and the things you've learned. So without further ado, why don't we just start off with kind of showing what your final piece looks like, and we'll proceed from then.
I think I'll probably open up the page on my portfolio, maybe. Might be the best way, since it's already there. And then I'll open up the scene. All right, share my screen. One second. Screen two. Okay, can you see what I'm looking at?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So this is a piece I kind of wanted to make. You know, just to start this off, last year, you know, the pandemic happened, a lockdown happened, and I needed something to kind of stay productive and just keep myself like engaged in my work. The thing is, in my day job, I use 3ds Max, so there's no real like use for Blender. Although I solve a lot of like modeling issues for Blender. If I run into some kind of modeling stuff in 3ds Max, I literally open up Blender and solve it there. Export and bring it back in. But that's like very minimal work, you know, usage, I mean. So I started up this car to see. It was just to make the car. I ended up making the scene because it got kind of hyped through the process, you know, as I learned more about Blender. So the initial project was just to make a render like this. I based the design off of Dragon Ball Snake Way, if you guys remember that show. Mm-hmm. And that scene. So, and here's the video I kind of composed through with Blender. I mean, yeah, put it together from Blender. So this is, you know, little razzle dazzle. Mm-hmm.
What was your inspiration? Like, so you said Dragon Ball Z was your inspiration. The car vehicle was something that you were been working on forever. I mean, together, the composition's awesome, man. I love the juxtaposition.
Thanks,
the, the contrast is awesome. I loved it. And your style is very Dragon Ball Z, even with the car.
Was that
on purpose at the beginning? I know you kind of melded it all together eventually.
Initially, I wanted to make a cyberpunk car in the style of, like, you know, my style, which is kind of like chibi, Dragon Ball-esque. Just because, like, I grew up with Akira Toriyama's work, and I just love his style, and I thought I'd make my own car, like, based loosely in his, you know, aesthetics. And that's why here, with the release of Cyberpunk, I was deciding, it's like, oh, I'm going to make a cyberpunk car to see if, you know, I can catch a release, and it'd be pretty cool. But like I said, the project evolved the moment I finished it. Up to this point, I realized I wanted to do a whole scene, because rendering it like this wasn't really giving it justice, in my opinion. So yeah. This was for Cyberpunk, but the idea was just to keep it kind of simple. So no baking of maps. There's no other outside process except making this all in Blender, and just, these are all procedural materials in Blender right now. So yeah.
In terms of processes, right? Like, one of the biggest things with game developer professionals or professionals in our field, it's a real accomplishment when a project is finished as a side thing, right?
Yes.
So your planning with that? Did you have like a firm deadline for yourself that you wanted to hit? How much time did you initially plan to dedicate to it to hit that deadline, and what did it end up being on average? Just kind of give people a peek of what a realistic timeline looks like for someone who's doing a full-time job.
Right on. Yeah, so managing, like, having a day job and, you know, having friendships, real relationships and stuff like that, just juggling all that together. I gave myself like a pretty realistic timeline, which was basically, you know, let's see what happens in a year. I didn't want to rush the process. I wanted to call it done when it looked close enough to finish. And luckily, I actually, I documented the process, like, through my building it from back in, oh, wow. I guess June 30th, I started this, and this is how it was. So I got a reference from, you know, online to get myself started, and I just started kind of picking at it. At this point of the of time, I didn't have a deadline just yet. I was just like, let's just start a project, and then, you know, I kind of roughly drew out what I want to make, which was basically, yeah, the cyberpunk car, cyber-esque. And then, yeah, so day one, block in. Day two, I started to kind of put it together. The first thing I kind of, one second. First thing I kind of wanted to make sure was getting across was basically the silhouette of this car. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing, 3 days in.
Did you have a concept, like you mentioned? You based it off of a real car and pushed and pull afterwards.
Exactly. I kind of messed around with it in real time, basically. So as soon as I, you know, like, most of these things are kind of made up as I go. Like, if you've seen a bumper, kind of changes a lot. I started looking up other cars as well from that era in the 80s and 70s, and just kind of picked and pulled what I like. So you can see me kind of changing the body kit there. Changing the skirt. I tried like an open face sandwich look in the front. But, you know, I guess you could call this part like the dev look, right? That's like the term for it. Mm-hmm. Look development. And just kind of continued. I thought I liked this, and then I ended up changing it. So here's the thing too, is like, as soon as I hit a wall, instead of kind of burning myself out and trying to figure it out, I like where this was going, but I felt like, you know, I didn't know which direction I should be going with this one. So I moved on to another process of the car, which was the inside. So you see me kind of like start focusing on here while my brain kind of processes this part. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, taking a break, basically. So I started moving on to the interior, slowly picking it away. This is day 8. But as you can tell, like, I'm spending, like, whole months in between. Like, there's days or weeks in between where I'm not working on it at all, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you can see from here in the top left, you see, like, July 20th, July 23. You know, I'm not always consistent every day, but point is, like, I'm working on it, you know?
Right. So how in those situations, when you come back to it, like, what motivates you? Like, all right, I gotta get back to this thing. Are you just finally like, I have 2 hours, I guess I can go back to this project? But what's the thinking process?
Well, basically, like, I trade a lot of my time for my hobbies, right? Like, for this project, I trade a little bit of time on my gaming. Basically, they share the exact same time space in my day. It's after work. It's either play video games, watch TV, or make art. That's all in one time zone, basically. Like, I have to pick and choose which one I want to spend on. And there's just days where I get bored with my TV shows or my movies, and I run out of stuff to do. So
this is the last
I turned
thing.
It on. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I turned this on. There's times where I'm just, like, not motivated. But the idea is, like, for me, it has always been to add, you know, to drop like an hour or two a day whenever I can, even if it feels like you're just, you know, pushing and pulling stuff around.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, you'll get something done. So I think, yeah, there's times where I barely do anything. Like, let's see, like, I might just end up doing this kind of a side mirror on the side for that one day. But it's good enough progress, you know. But yeah, so let's see. Day 13, start working on the door. Mm-hmm. Again, like, I don't really have the concept of what the colors might be here yet, but I just wanted to make sure the shape is good. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So I think right here, as soon as I started to clean it up and get like a high poly, I started to add like mock-up colors to see if there's any errors. And that's kind of generally, I try to get into the material part as early as I can in a project because, like, it helps solidify the form. So I keep trying it. So this is, but yeah, look at the time difference in the top left, right? If you look at the last time, July 30th, day 13. Day 14 was all the way in December.
You know, I really love how you kind of diary your screenshot. It's something I should be doing. It's really helpful to kind of see the gaps. And right now for listeners, Lindo's kind of showing us how he saves his JPEG in terms of dates.
And timestamp it,
Timestamp it. That's very clever.
I kind of thought of that idea because of, you know, how we've been doing this kind of interviews, and I thought about how maybe one day I'd like to make a tutorial, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Try to get the pipeline as clean as possible. And so I think this was like the best way to take notes as I go and keep track of what I finished in between that time.
Well, keeping track and being able to see progress are like one of are two of the biggest things to kind of help with motivation. Like, getting started is always like the hardest, but like, as soon as you start moving things around 5 minutes in, I always find myself enjoying it again. It's like, why you take so long just to do this? Just do it.
I think this whole screenshot thing has helped me kind of like get myself on board quicker, because I've just kind of flipped through it and I'm like, okay, where's the trajectory so far, you know? And it's kind of by accident. So day 17, hold on, I kind of messed up on the days here. And then day 18, more fleshing out. Yeah, 19 days in. Yeah, like there's huge gaps in between the timelines, but this is all between like other artwork and other, you know, between work and stuff.
So on average, what do you feel are like the gaps? Like 2 weeks, a month on average when you get back
average
to working on it, to taking a break?
Well, since I consider this one of like what I call like one of my masterwork, so I kind of leave it in the back burner, and I take, you know, everything else gets kind of pushed up front because, you know, my day job and contracts and stuff. But that's why it kind of depends on that. So you saw me jump in from July all the way till December. January. That's huge. Or yeah, that was a huge gap in between. So yeah. So, but I don't know. The more I kind of flesh it out, the more I kind of want to log more hours in. You can tell on the top, like, started getting more consistent, wanting to get more time in.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. So I think at this point, for the materials too, I just kind of picked like primitive, procedural textures available to Blender. I'll kind of show you how I do that basically. But from here, day 24, I decided, you know what? I think I can make a scene, just keep making the, you know, the project bigger and bigger. So yeah, this is the, you know, the progress so far. So that was stage one, which is modeling phase. Stage two, I decided to, you know, put the thing in scene. And like I said, the first thing I do is just start to color it and start to light the scene as basic as possible and get the point across real quick. I don't want to waste too much time, really, you know. So yeah, and slowly after that, I just start to build up on the idea. It's like, do I want scales? Change the scales. Textures. Again, keeping like screenshots of all the progress and the lighting. Because like if you don't, I feel like you lose perspective, and in a way, I feel like I lose the momentum if I don't know what happened last or something, you know, like there's a lot to figure out. And yeah, I tried different clouds. You could see me kind of testing it out. The more realistic one, I instantly didn't really like it. Just went back to the Orby kind of Dragon Ball one. And this one, like as the days pass, the more hours I'm starting to put in. So instead of in the beginning when I was just modeling, it's like an hour, two a day or three. And sometimes rarely, you know, 6 hours if I just have a free day. But once I start getting into the lighting part here, where it starts to get exciting, the hours starts to pile up. Like I started to drop in like 5 to 6 hours if I can, just because I'm like excited. And then, you know, just keep playing with the way it looks. Change the ground texture here.
Yeah, for listeners, he's showing layers and layers of more detailed work. Right now, he has like a dragon road. For those who are listening, do yourself a service and watch the video. It's really cool, man. How your thinking process, and I can totally see it. That's why I think a lot of artists, like as soon as you can get some materials and lighting in there, the better. Feel the composition, getting together the colors, kind of working together. It's constantly trying to motivate yourself to cross the finish line.
So you start to, you know, yeah, exactly. So just keep like, you know, keep track of all the progress and look at it a lot. Let's see if I can play this. If this doesn't play, I might just open. Yeah. So I first started to render this. Maybe I'll start to open the Blender file here. So this is the first scene that I kind of put together, you know, based on kind of what I learned from college using Maya and learning how to do animation, basically. It's kind of the same thing in Blender, really. There's like, you know, dope sheets, and then there's a whole bunch of other, let's see, timelines. You can mess with pretty much anything, but that's technical. You know, I'll let you guys kind of research that if you're interested. But yeah, so the first thing, I started to, after I put the scene together, I decided, I want to animate it. So, you know, traditionally what I learned was to animate on a spline. So that's the first thing I kind of established is where that's going to be. And basically I parented my car to the spline there. And then I also kind of low-key rigged it. It's a little bit of research here in a way. If I turn this way, the other wheel turns as well. You'll see. And then for this, there's a little bit of a constraint. I have the constraint so that, or I have the wheel so that it spins with the ground, basically, if that makes sense, like it's relative to the location. So you see it kind of spinning. It actually follows the path of the road as it goes down the line. You can't really see it in the animation because it kind of goes really fast, but like you see the detail on the back of your, you know what I mean? The back of your mind, basically. Yeah. And so, this other stuff, as I kind of put this together, I started to add the lights in front of the car. You can see there. It's kind of unnaturally where it's at, but that's on purpose. Like if you look at it, the block, the light's shining down. But if you look at my scene, it's two emissive kind of lights, like almost touching to give it an illusion that it's, you know, beaming out. But yeah. So the first thing without, actually before I even started to do all of these other crazy stuff in the scene, I started to animate this before, putting too much, you know, I just started to build up on it. So I made sure the car animates first. Well, like it reads well first. And then I started to add like the camera spin and the other birds. And if you look at the bird on the left there, I have it so the bird looks at the car as it passes. But yeah, as nice. You can tell though, like once you get to this point where there's a lot of stuff in the scene, you know, the frames per second, it makes it really hard to edit your animation. But yeah, that's something like, you know, that's for the individual artists to really kind of learn by themselves, really, technique. Anyways, one other cool thing, just talk about Blender. So just fucking, I just love Blender now. It has this, you can preview your, you know, your scene at any time, always, and it has a very strong rendering, or it just looks really good, in my opinion.
This is the Eevee thing?
No, this is not Eevee. This one's Cycles.
Cycles.
I could I could show you a bit about like Eevee.
Yeah.
Eevee's like the real-time render. So when I do contract work, like what I've done recently, that's how I would test it, is to use Eevee in the Blender. And or I could just use Marmoset, but you know, I could just switch the render engines right here. The Cycles is more for beauty stuff like this and whatnot. So yeah. So after I did this scene, I decided it wasn't really long enough. It was like 5 seconds or something. And then I decided to I shouldn't have clicked that. So this is the PBR shade mode right here. But this scene isn't really built for PBR. I didn't build it that way. So it's going to look kind of funky when it loads. But, okay, here we go. I'm going to open the second scene, basically. I saved like a separate file for the second scene just so I don't mess this one up, you know?
Well, what has been the most exciting thing? I know you've been using Blender and early adopter Blender for a while. What was the most exciting thing the past year that was added that you thought was a huge huge progress?
Okay. Oh man, there's, I think like every day that I use this, I kind of learn that there's a lot of very useful aspects about Blender. You could basically make, what was it? Like a node-based object disbursement tool. It's kind of like, man, it's hard to describe, but there's a lot of features I haven't really even touched on. But my favorite so far has been this kind of GoB function, from Blender to ZBrush, which is right here in the top right. You'll see like an export button.
I see.
And it's instantaneous to ZBrush. So it doesn't really, you know, if you rely on ZBrush, then you got that.
Yeah.
And a pipeline up here in the top left, you can export to Unreal when you're using PBR stuff, which is what I've been kind of using recently. And everything is instantaneous. Like it's suddenly in the program you need it in. You can do your tests really quick. Almost every week they add new tools for you to use. And I guess that's my favorite part about it is how it's, since it's open source, you're always kind of getting more tools, you know?
Yeah.
And the rendering engine, they keep updating that. So it just looks better and better every single time I open it. But one of the first things is to really, or one of the first hurdles, I think, when people open a Blender is to get the controls right.
Yeah.
And I feel like when people get past that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just as powerful as any other engine, really, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, it's all the little features and the extra scripts and, you know, they're really easy to add. They always add it here, or sometimes they'll add it automatically. So you open up this bit right here and it shows you like all the available add-ons that are supported by Blender. You could also add custom ones too, but this is another neat thing. If you need palettes or brush sets, whatever, Gobi, this one's for ZBrush. You just kind of click it on and then suddenly it's on. Yeah. Anyways, let's see. Yeah, pretty much. So I did this scene. This is the second scene. Kind of just like did a, thought it'd be kind of cool to see it kind of enter the environment. So I had the car kind of coming down from the back snake road, end it this way, and then put it together with the first scene. So yeah, but pretty straightforward. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was that? There's always been like two types of artists. I'm kind of in the latter, where one is very open and constantly asking for critiques from like a trusted group of peers, and the other is like it's not done till it's done. You don't see it till it's done, which is kind of like me. Did you ask for eyes during this whole process? Did you just?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. The thing about me is like my art kind of, you know, career, I guess, has always been kind of public. You know, I always post what I've made, and in that way, it gets me used to, you know, other people looking at my stuff. And it gauges, you know, the quality. If people kind of don't like it or whatever, they generally won't say anything. Yeah. But I ask all my other friends too in the industry and ask them, it's like, hey, how does this look? Guys like the shape and whatnot. And yeah, so I take some feedback. Honestly, there's a lot of stuff I couldn't have figured out without really asking a lot of my friends who already know how to use Blender, you know, in other aspects, like the rigging part, I couldn't have figured that out by myself, honestly, or at least it would have took me a lot longer if I didn't ask. But luckily someone in my network knew, it's like, oh, you can, you know, render, or you can rig it this way. So take their suggestions and just kind of put it all together. That's the advantage. I guess the disadvantage is if like, if you take criticism or any of that kind of harshly, you know, you might be stopped in your tracks or just kind of discouraged because you got so much more work to do. But honestly, it's your vision, you know? I feel like everybody, like a lot of people had their kind of take of what your scene supposed to look like. A lot of it I heard, but, you know, only you as the artist would know what would fit in there. So you kind of make that judgment call in the end anyway. But yeah, definitely take some feedback. My opinion, I think it helps.
Yeah. I always find it interesting when talking to artists when they're working on personal projects. I mean, unless they're like this like some artists just do it because I don't know, they don't do anything else. But like other artists, they kind of pick it up like at certain points of their career or certain points of their life, right? Where it's like in response of something. I think we mentioned it before, and it sounds like you're starting to get back into the gaming side of development. Like, yeah, is that the motivator to kind of start this project, to kind of like get your wheels turning again and greased up?
Yeah, definitely. I had some time to kind of figure out what I wanted to do with my 3D skills.
This is during the pandemic, right? In the middle.
Yeah. Okay. In the middle of it, I had to kind of figure out and make a pivot, you know. It's like, it's cool where I'm at, but I have to think about where I can apply my future skills, you know, where I want to take my career to. And, you know, I listed out the things that I needed to learn for myself, which was basically Unreal and to polish a pipeline that suits, you know, game development, basically. And yeah, I've been doing a lot of research lately, kind of get back into it. And Blender has been really, yeah, since it's free, you know, and it's
a good bet. Yeah. Everyone's kind of learning it.
I think people are starting to kind of come around and really use it. And the more videos I start to see about how easy it is to implement into your workflow, you know, the more motivated I'm starting to get. So yeah, there was that. I kind of thought, you know, I think it's, I kind of gave myself like an assessment. It's like I said, like it's whatever I'm doing right now is pretty cool for a job, but in the future, I'd like to start to take on things that are of my interest purely. Like, yeah, you know, it's like sometimes all I want to do is make game art for months and not have to worry about a day job one day. And that would be kind of the dream. So, you know, I'm starting to just ramp up to that, start to pick up contracts. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, I think there's like an important aspect of Blender that I think I want to kind of highlight. I'm not going to share who this game is for, but at least I'll show you like the process of, you know, how this can be an advantage for pretty much anybody. Mm-hmm. So for me, if you don't have if you don't have Marmoset or whatever, because I know that kind of costs some money, but here in Blender, you could also kind of, you can check out your PBR materials and definitely integrate into a Unreal workflow, basically. So, or PBR workflow. So I'll show you how easy it is. You know, turn on, I'll go to the preference, show you one of the tricks that I found out, Node Wrangler. This basically takes all your maps and, you know, this is called a node-based editor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it pretty much like puts your maps in the right plugins automatically for you. So I'll show you how easy that might be. So right here, all I'm doing is Control-Shift-T. I'm going to pick all the maps I'm going to use. Then it applies automatically. And then from here, you know, since my project right now is in Unreal, from here, all I have to do is click the pipeline here and export to Unreal. And then from there, I can turn in my work, basically. But this is a PBR asset right here. So you could always test it. You change the environment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah, this is my most current workflow, basically. Blender to ZBrush, a texture and substance, and I'm starting to use Unreal, so I'm pretty happy about that.
It's in terms of your personal assessment and things that you need to catch up on, like what did you put in on where you want to end up in 5 years? Are you looking to make your own game? What's the grand goal here?
The grand goal definitely is to be autonomous, right? Make my own, be my own boss and stuff like that. For now, I want to launch some games with folks. I think I'm at the point where I want to join some strip some games and actually get that experience under my belt and, you know, do that and then see. Honestly, I think eventually I'll probably end up wanting to make my own games, you know. For now, I'm kind of just feeling it out, trying not to force it.
Yeah.
I don't want to obsess over a game company, really.
Well, being in the Bay helps, I think. You're still in the Bay Area, right?
I'm still here.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming last year, too, like most, you were at home doing the remote thing. Is that going to be a part of your big decisions too, since a lot of people are starting to go back in the office now?
Definitely. I'm trying to stay away from the office.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of want to jump into these things and kind of make that path for myself. If I feel like I need to, you know, pivot.
Yeah.
I feel like I can't do the office thing. It's been since last year, March, that I've been in office, but I really like working from home over this last year. Yeah.
I'm trying to take like a survey every time I talk to guests. Like, is there a word yet of when you guys need to be back in the office, or is it still open-ended?
It's open-ended. I think they talked about maybe one day they'll do like half and half, I guess, like not that many people in the office at once, maybe 3 days a week, or
that's 50%
capacity half the week, and then the other 50% comes
that's
in.
Better than most companies, man. Most companies kind of reversed on that.
What do you mean, like, just full on office now?
Well, I mean, there was talks about it early in the year. A lot of the people that I talked to had that initial hybrid talk. It's like, hey, maybe this is a thing. But as soon as, you know, the vaccines came out, completely reversed, saying that, oh, no, we're going to want you back in the office. No more half-half. Oh. But, you know, that's very game development studios. So you're outside of that bubble. So it sounds good that, like, there's companies still kind of holding on to that, which makes sense, right? It's worked for a year. There's no reason why it wouldn't work for more years to come.
Right, exactly. So for now, you know, I'm not too stressed. Like, I like my day job, so keep it till I pay off my student loans, basically. That's still a reality, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. No matter how successful you get, you still have to pay that off.
It's true.
Yeah. And, you know, taking your advice, basically, just pay it off as early as possible. And
it is a relief. You know,
I've been kind of thinking about that. It's like, I really just don't want to pay for that. You know, I like stretch it out till I'm paying for it while I'm old and hopefully forgive it. No.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll ever happen. So just, you know, that's also part of why I started picking up contracts too, is like, I wanted to accelerate paying that off at the same time, learning new skills and expanding my skills and, you know, be more relevant to the current pipeline today.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, development for different industries is always different. I've heard so many times about, I always look at engineers because they seem to always have that choice of staying at a tech company with like all those, luxuries, and still choose to go back to games for some reason. And it's always been their love for it. Now, there's something about game development that's very unique and fun and challenging that really can't find anywhere else, which is still very true, right? So
I think so. Yeah, I think mainly for me, once I get rid of the student loans, like, the rest, like I mentioned, like wanting to ship games, that's just me saying, like, you know, maybe one day I won't have to worry about that crazy amount of debt. So I'll just pick up any project that I'm really interested in and help ship it, you know, despite of the amount of cash you're going to get paid, really. Just do it for fun after a while, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, when it comes to bills, the less you have, the better. I mean, as soon as you pay off your bills, the sooner you can build up your wealth and have autonomy.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, we're at that age, right? It was, I think, around late 20s, early 30s when it's like, I can't keep doing that.
I'm like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, like we're becoming that old. It's a weird thing, right? You go into a place, it's like, oh man, I'm becoming the old guy in the office. Yeah. You see these young bucks coming in. And then it was a, I would say that's the age of a midlife crisis for a game developer. I don't know if anyone ever coined that for game developer, but it was around 25, 30-ish, early 30 where I like had to make like a, I knew I had to make a change. Yeah, because that's when, you know, your significant other, your, my wife in that case is like, oh, let's have more kids and stuff. It's like, well, looking around, it's like, you know, you hit a certain point in your career, it's like, I can't really make that much more. You know, I can beg for that 10%, right? But like, I have to really show it within that year of why I deserve that one 10%. It's ridiculous, right? So it wasn't until after I moved away, it's like, man, if you want to make 10% more money, do something outside of work. You'll earn that way quicker. And you build up that ability to kind of continue that with no cap. So I'm glad you're going down this journey. It's like, yeah, man, you can make all that money that you've always wanted without having to like play in that political the politics drama. The office drama is when it really built up around this time when you're like senior.
Yeah.
You know, going for lead. I know you're like kind of a manager at this point. But like that it's a weird, now you want to go a little higher, right? Anytime there's like a single role that's everybody wanting it, there's gonna be some drama involved. Definitely. And there's only so many times that you can leave a studio and keep coming back for promotions, right? So
I'm trying to like mitigate that kind of issue because I know there'll be a ceiling one day and I'm gonna want more cash and I don't want to buy a home place, or something. So this is part of that journey, you know, picking up contracts and getting good at these things. To be honest, I might end up one day making tutorials for Blender, a side income or something.
One day, start now, man. You're starting right now.
I think after his contract, I'll start to like, you know, I'll start to record and see.
Yeah, you documented. Yeah, you documented really well. You know, you have a great project, just showing how to do it. Blender's super popular. Everyone's trying to learn it. I think you have a lot of knowledge there. You know, we can talk offline about how to make your first thing going. But like, I think it's great, man. I think you remind me a lot about what it was like early 30-ish. I mean, it was around that stage where I was like, need to make a change. And it was around, I paid off my loans. I think around 30. I made it a goal to hit 30 with no loans.
Amazing.
Not just mine, but my wife's loan. School loan. I double whammy it. I was like, no. And it was a relief, right? Just to get it off your back. It was funny. It was like within that year or two, I paid off pretty much all the loans, like the school loans, as well as my car. Just completely paid off. Those were
doing like contracts heavy. Or how did you do it actually?
Well, I was teaching a lot, right? So when I was teaching at Art Institute, I think when I started teaching shortly after 26, 27, right? I think early 30s is when I started teaching, probably 28 to 30s. When I started teaching seriously. And it was basically, just after hours, 3 days a week for 5 years. Sometimes Saturdays for 4 hours, right? Just going to the campus and teaching. And it was me kind of just getting used to doing things outside of work and kind of sacrificing that time, building it up to something. And didn't really have a grand plan of like, oh, I can teach full time. I did have like a idea that I can build this secondary career into, because teaching as an older fellow is a very realistic goal. It's like, hey, you know, if you ever want to retire, you can teach. But the thing with us is in technology is like, you're only relevant unless you have one foot in the industry, right? Otherwise you're that old guy teaching 20 year old knowledge, right? It's not really great and relevant. Every year there's something new in game dev. So thankfully, yeah, I was in that, you know, I was working at Sledge. I was still in AAA while teaching. So that helped. But then that slowly developed into creating games go online. It's like, you know, I'm pretty much coming up with all these materials myself. I'm showing it myself. At one point I was teaching over at, what was that college in Emeryville? Digital Expression College, right? The Expression College, right across the bridge.
Right.
Like, they had a new campus in San Jose or something, or around there. And I was new, but I was teaching at an odd hour too. And they were very accommodating. So I was coming there at like 7 PM and it was a 2 hour, 3 hour class. I was like, you know, I can teach then. If you guys can do that. It's like, yeah, obviously. And they would basically give me the code to open up the building, and we were the only ones there. And that was my first day. I was like, wow, you know, I'm letting myself in. I'm turning all the lights on. I'm turning it all off. And it's like a legitimate school, right? I was like, I've never met the principal or anybody else. And then I did 4 or 5 years of that. And I was like, you know what? I can probably do this on my own.
Yeah.
The consistency is nice. But it was like one of those things, like if you don't, it's like opening the door to something to kind of have opportunities open up. So even if you don't have your 5-year plan completely planned out, it's like leaving a little breadcrumb to kind of see or seeds, actually planting little seeds to see where it goes and kind of going along with the ride. But all of it really just boils down to me then was commitment. Like I was putting in the work. I was doing 3 hours, sometimes 3 classes a week for 5 years straight. You know, and that means a lot of like vacation time sacrifice, you know, kids, you know, spending time with the kids and family, you know, sacrifice. But I knew that I had to have something on the side, because right. I know this working in the studio thing was not going to be my thing.
Right.
It didn't seem, it didn't seem attracted to me in my 40s. Like it didn't seem like a fun thing. And I saw that. I just didn't know exactly what to do. And then the teaching thing became the school thing, and the school thing became, you know, the podcast thing. The podcast thing kind of came at the same time. And then eventually creating my own studio and servicing. And now I'm still working with AAA Studios, but you know, as a partner, which is a whole different dynamic. Mm-hmm. But like all that stemmed from teaching.
It's awesome.
Which opened up opportunities. And so I'm so happy that you're kind of going down this path, because I know even though you don't know what you're going to do, it eventually does kind of help you towards that grand goal. And
I kind of see it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's part of the fun, man. Super relative. Oh, yeah. Man. And it's not about like the content. It's like, are you cool with dedicating extra time doing something else besides having fun and going to work? Right. And
right.
That's the difference maker. And what I saw the last year, a lot of people struggled working at home for that reason. They had a separation between work and home.
Right.
And so when they were forced to kind of work at home, they didn't know what to do. They just couldn't schedule it. They had kids running around. So, you know, upcoming roundtable, we're going to discuss it, but like the GDC survey, there was a huge delay of pretty much all the games for every company, because it was a huge mess trying to, manage all the people remotely and people managing themselves remotely.
Yeah.
But the people that succeeded, the people like yourself and concept artist, basically. Loved it because they have that experience of working extra hours. Yeah. And knowing how they work at home and how to function and how to separate and focus. It's an important skill. It's an important skill, and maybe it can be built up, but I kind of feel like people don't have the time to practice it. So I think a lot of people can't do it. Yeah, it's disappointing to kind of see, because I always believed that everybody should be working from home, and everybody can work from home and their life naturally improves. But that last year kind of opened my eyes, like, oh wow, okay, this is only like very unique people. Only unique people can do it and get things done. Yeah.
Man, I think for me, one of the first things too is like starting this whole work from home and during the pandemic thing is that like it was very offset for sure. Like I spent more time working, and some days like you know I didn't know when to stop. I kind of had the opposite like problem where you know I just don't want to make a bad work, bro. I mean, just like I have a lot of pride in my projects and stuff, and it got to the point where I started to schedule my free time. I had to schedule like my break times, basically, that way I don't burn myself out.
Yeah,
and definitely just trying to stay healthy mentally by, you know, staying off as much unneeded noise as possible. And I'm talking about like social media and just being on mindlessly scrolling through Instagram or something. And, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot. You know, I just want to point that out because it doesn't seem like a lot, but, you know, people can scroll through there all day and
definitely
lose so much time.
I find myself back in those webs sometimes. It's like, what am I doing? Like, what did I learn today? Like the unproductiveness is fine once in a while because, you know, your brain kind of needs that dumb moment to just be dumb, right? But then, too much of that, like you said, social media, you kind of, at least for me, I kind of, a week goes by or 2 weeks goes by, you feel pretty empty. It's like, wow, I'm not improving at all at anything. And people keep questioning what's the meaning of life. And I really do think it's just growth. Like, are you growing in any way? Are you better? Are you getting funnier? Right. Or are you getting just better in any aspects of your life? So the social media stuff is a trap.
I think personally just causes people to overthink and, you know, overthink because like in a way when you open it up and you start to see like your peers doing well or just doing well in general, you start to, I mean, not everybody does it, but in a weird way, you probably do kind of compare, like, what have I done by myself?
Right.
And so I think it starts a whole snowball effect. It just, you kind of questioning why you're here, what you're doing with stuff. And in generality, like nothing really makes sense. You know what I mean? Like thinking about that too much is going to drive you nuts. And like I said, like it starts to get in the way of things, you know, because if I start to question why this is even relevant, then I'm just maybe I'll probably just end up not even touching it anymore. It's like, it's not even industry standard tool. This blender, nobody talks about it, but talks crap about it on forums all the time. But for me, like I focus on just making the art and
product,
and the product. Yeah. Like trying to reach back and remember why I even started this whole thing in the first place, you know, just like trying to enjoy what I'm doing as a day job, honestly.
Right.
And that's why we choose the art field, because it's mostly fun.
I do find this, I tell myself every couple of months, it's like when I start to kind of like, it's funny, right? Because I have a few things going and it is my thing finally, but I am in that phase. It's like, I definitely have a primary, which is running the studio. And then, you know, on the side is the school and the podcast stuff. With how that shifted, right, where the primary used to be working for someone else, and now it's like, so you're like, it's kind of like in the same trap. I enjoy everything that I'm doing, and it's definitely much better than before because I have a better control of my future. But it's like it's shifting, right? It's like, all right, now I got two side things. All right, I got to keep that going. And I find myself in those traps. It's like sometimes you want to relax, but other times, it's very easy to kind of compare it to others. But the main thing is that I lose my, because you can imagine I'm doing a lot more management stuff now. So I'm trying to get back to my art roots, which I lose control once in a while. And the only time I kind of connect back to that artist self again is like, why did I like the game industry? You know,
right.
I started with playing games. And so I find myself in those little bubbles when I'm not playing that many games. It's like, all right, I got to start playing games again.
Yeah.
And it's
scheduling
like
the fun back.
Scheduling the fun. It's funny, but yeah, we kind of have to schedule, especially once you pile on the kids for you later, right?
You
really have to find the time to like, I'm dedicating an hour to play games. I have so many games I got to play. Yeah. And that kind of sparks the, oh man, this is kind of cool what they did. I kind of want to do something like this. And then that's like, it's restarting why you got through college, basically. Mm. It's like, oh, that's how I do it. At least for me, that's the fire that's I'm rediscovering time and time again. It's like, you got to play that game to want to make an artwork that looks like that game. To motivate you to want to work for or with those companies that make that game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Very, very weird thing. Obviously there's like badass artists out there that's always making art all the time. But I think on average, most of us are like, at least for me, I find myself in this cycle of slumps. It's like, all right, I got to remember, I got to do this.
Right.
Because, you know, the life. Yeah, the life stuff is fun, man. It's like you got into a lot of it. I think it does with age, too. It's like you got to this part of your life where you're kind of comfortable. It's like, and you kind of push the family off for a long time, especially for me. Like all those years, it's been work, work, work.
Yeah.
Working Saturdays, working 3 days after work to teach, you know. It's like, well, you should. Yeah. I mean, like, what's the point of all that if you're not enjoying life stuff?
Bring a balance in.
Yes. So
makes sense.
But doing your own stuff helps, you know, being autonomous. But I am in that phase of my life where like, yeah, I'm doing all this stuff myself. But what about the other two things that I want to do? It's funny. It's like my juggling your own stuff, but still the same issue. It's like you're trying to find time.
Yeah, trying to transition into that. Like, I don't know. Like, I talk about balance a lot. I have some rules for myself, you know, like very general stuff. Like, when I spend time with my lady, it's like I stay off of everything and just try not to multitask in general.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yep.
I feel like that's a trap. Like, I know people who kind of brag about being able to multitask for a while, but I think it just causes OCD in my opinion.
Yeah.
Multitask is in like, while I'm working on this, I have like something else on the side. I have a TV show on the side or whatever. This thing that people can do where they're working and have Netflix playing in the corner. I kind of used to do that, but honestly, it also still kind of gets in the way.
Yeah.
So to properly kind of not do that, where you kind of like piling all these things, like maybe I'm just kind of like veering off a little bit, but maybe not trying to watch a movie at the same time you're working on your art. Like, have a separate time for that, in my opinion. Like, you know, maybe after you're done working for your art, actually sit down and watch something you like, you know, kind of slow things down. Because again, I feel like the mental is always the last hurdle, in my opinion. Like, you know, people start to get into their heads throughout this whole kind of lockdown and getting stuck, because it starts to get depressing when you think too much, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But so definitely trying to get back to the whole like why I love this whole thing, kind of slowly getting into it. I always talked about wanting to pick up contract work for games, and I'm starting to do it. And like what you said, just kind of plant the seeds and roll with it, right? And just see where it goes. Hopefully it'll develop into you know, a really fun career after this, which I think it will, you know.
Yeah, man, I'm super excited to kind of hear you doing what you want to do. Pandemic, man, either makes you lazier or more efficient. So I'm glad you're taking the latter, and looking at ways to make your life better. So I think that's the perfect way to kind of end with that note. But this is actually the part of the podcast, if you don't mind. To kind of tell the people out there how to find your stuff, how to connect with you.
Yeah, you can find me on ArtStation, Lindell 40K, right here. You can find me in there, and you can also find me on LinkedIn, Lindell Kempis. So definitely give me a follow and stay up to date. I kind of post as regularly as I can, you know. Like,
I love the diorama, man. You have a very I feel like you're like making commercials.
Yeah, I'm a little inspired by my coworkers. They do a lot of really realistic architecture work, so I just decided, you know.
Well, not just that, the way you cut it up, it looks like along with your car, like miniatures. It has a really cool look to it. Like, if it was just if you had made the choice to make that into a full, like, you know, arch viz boringness, right? But the way you kind of laid it out like a little kid's toy, and
yeah,
it's cool. It's very it's a very strong composition.
Thanks, man. Yeah,
it's that extra edge. Yeah,
that's one other thing too. I think when people make 3D art for their portfolio, they tend to just kind of like make the raw model, like for example,
the obvious,
like this one, where it's just like he's just posed in there and there's no pizzazz, you know what I mean? It's just this, like, yeah. It's cool, but yeah. I'll show you. I like this one the most out of like my most recent ones, because you know, trying to make it a whole piece altogether, right? Take care of the background and actually make it engaging, not just like a model to look at, because anybody can make a model, but it's just, for me, it's that little bit of attention to detail that kind of sets your work apart. Right. You don't have to, but...
But this alone, what you're showing me, like, from the tank on, basically, there's, like, a huge evolution in terms of your presentation.
Oh, yeah, the tank taught me a lot.
The tank on, like, you seem to kind of... I'm seeing more of your touch. Like, your tank, your computer... Right, and your diorama in the car, like those four are like very, it seemed like you had a lot of fun with it, but at the same time it's showing me more of your personality too, which is really cool. Yeah it's nice seeing that stuff. Yeah,
find me on LinkedIn, find me on ArtStation, definitely connect with me, you know, ask me questions if you like. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that's the show, guys. Welcome to Art Boost. Maybe you'll see a future collab between GSO and Lindell about how he broke down Blender's super popular now. So I think, Lindell, you have a heads up, or at least a head start on showing people what to do with that. The getting started on Blender. But thanks for dropping by, and thank you, guys. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give GameDev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/bluechamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.